عليكم جميعا ورحمة الله وبركاته. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، والصلاة والسلام على أنبياء الله جميعا وعلى سيدهم وخاتمهم حبيب إله العالمين أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد، وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين وأصحابه المنتجبين ومن تبعهم بإحسان وإيمان إلى يوم الدين. سورة الرعد verses 31 and 32. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. ولو أن قرآنا سيرت به الجبال أو قطعت به الأرض أو كلم به الموتى. ولو أن قرآنا سيرت به الجبال أو قطعت به الأرض أو كلم به الموتى بل لله الأمر جميعا أفلم ييأس الذين آمنوا أن لو يشاء الله لهدى الناس جميعا ولا يزال الذين كفروا تصيبهم بما صنعوا قارعة أو تحل قريبا من دارهم حتى يأتي وعد الله إن الله لا يخلف الميعاد ولقد استهزئ برسل من قبلك فأمليت للذين كفروا ثم أخذتهم فكيف كان عقاب. صدق الله العلي العظيم. Maybe the most difficult job in this life is the job of the messengers and the prophets, because they come to communities. Not only these communities are disbelievers and they reject God, but also they trample upon human values. Human values, moral values are missing from these communities. So the prophet, any prophet or the messenger is coming to transform this community completely, to refurbish them, to re-establish them, to recreate them, to reprogram their minds. And that is not easy. Imagine yourself as a father. You have a couple of children at home. You are struggling with them. Every father knows this. Every mother knows. When you have children and you try to protect your children from evil doing, from bad influence, bad friends, from drugs, you struggle. You struggle day and night. Raising children is 24/7 job. If you have two children at home, I've seen some fathers, they grew gray hair because they have one son. One son. Imagine a prophet who's dealing with thousands of people. Thousands of people who mock him, who reject God, who abuse themselves, abuse their families, abuse their neighbors, and abuse others. Imagine his situation. They struggled, really. Their job was very difficult. Their job was very demanding, very exhausting. Many of them almost quit their jobs. Do you know? وَذَنُّونِ إِذْ ذَهَبَ مُغَاضِبًا فَظَنَّ أَنْ لَنْ نَقْدِرَ عَلَيْهِ. God said, we sent him to a community. وَأَرْسَلْنَاهُ إِلَى مِئَةِ أَلْفٍ أَوْ يَزِيدُونَ. We sent Yunus, Jonah, the Noon, to a community of 100,000 or more. Not millions, 100,000. 100,000 is a village. It's not even a city. What is the population of Irvine today? 150? So less than the city of Irvine. He could not continue. He ran away. وَذَنُّونِ إِذْ ذَهَبَ مُغَاضِبًا. He said, I'm tired. I'm tired with those people. Many of them almost quit their jobs. Almost. They really quit their job. But God said, you have to stay. You made a covenant with me. You signed a contract to work for me. You have to stay. You can't quit your job. This is your responsibility. This is what I say to many mothers and fathers who are tired dealing with their children. That this is your this is your main responsibility. If you quit, who's going to come? Who's going to fill the void? Who's going to assume the role of mother, the role of father? You must continue. So one of the ways that they used against the prophets, especially the Meccans, the idol worshippers, those the most arrogant people that were in Mecca, by the way. The most arrogant people in the whole world were the pagans of Mecca at that time, the idol worshippers. And their name was Jahili, Jahili from ignorance, imagine. They were related to ignorance. Everything they did, everything they said, stemmed from ignorance. So one of the things they did against the Prophet, وَلَقَدْ وَلَوْ أَنَّ قُرْآنًا سُيِّرَتْ بِهِ الْجِبَالِ They came, they were mocking the Prophet. A group of them were sitting in the sacred mosque. The Prophet's job, the Prophet's arena, was the sacred mosque. He would go there, people come to see him, and he would recite the Quran. So when he entered the mosque, Masjid al-Haram, a group of them decided to tell him this, that, O Muhammad, if you are really prophet and you speak on behalf of God, then we have certain demands. Show us that you are real prophet. So he said, what do you want? They said simple things. We want you to move these mountains. You know, Mecca is surrounded. Mecca and the sacred mosque is surrounded by huge mountains. So we want you to set these mountains in motion. Let them move. Or the other one, أو قطعت به الأرض, make the earth clift. Cut the earth into two pieces. Imagine, these are their demands. The third one, أو كلم به الموتى, make the dead one speak. Show us some signs that you are a real prophet, real messenger of God. God has sent you to us. We need these miracles to happen. What is the answer? If you follow the Quran, Quran has two types of discourses, two types of speeches to two different people. One speech is based on physical, material, and visual miracle that speaks to the eyes of the people. People see that with their eyes, and then either they accept or reject. This type of discourse, this type of speech, is directed to those who really do not want to use their mind. Either they don't have mind, or they don't want to use their mind to reflect. So God will speak to them in their own language. He will show them physical miracles, as he did with many prophets. One of them was with Nuh. Nuh was building the ark in a desert. وَكُلَّمَا مَرَّ عَلَيْهِ مَلَأٌ مِّن قَوْمِهِ سَخِرُ مِنْهِ They said to him, Nuh, where is the lake? Where is water here? Where is the river? Where is the sea? You are building an ark in a desert? But that was a miracle. Nuh said, wait, only a few days, you will see the result. You will see what will happen. And Musa alayhi salam performed the miracle of cutting the sea into two sections, cutting through the sea, passing through the sea, and then the great, not a snake, what is it? Python? Huh? Serpent? Huge serpent. and many others. And Jesus' miracle to cure the deaf, the blind, to resurrect the dead. So they came, they said to him, previous prophets, they had physical miracles. The answer of God. God says, I can make the prophet. I can allow him, give him the power to perform mu'jiza, physical, material, miracle. And he did, by the way. By the way, those who ask, where is the miracle of Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam? If you read the history of the Prophet through the 23 years of his reign, his ministry, his life, his message, he did perform physical miracles. He did. And it is mentioned in the history. But then God is saying that my second type of discourse and speech is when I speak to your mind. Speaking to the mind is much powerful than speaking to your eyes. Intellectual speech, spiritual speech, is more powerful than the physical one and the material one. And God says, this is the book. We can make this book. وَلَوْ أَنَّ قُرْآنًا قُطِّعَتْ وَلَوْ أَنَّ قُرْآنًا سُيِّرَتْ بِهِ الْجِبَالِ أَوْ قُطِّعَتْ بِهِ الْأَرْضِ أَوْ كُلِّمَ بِهِ الْمَوْتَى. It's easy for us to make this book, through this book, the verses of this book, we set the mountains in motion. We cut the earth into half. We make the dead resurrected. We make them speak through this book, through the verses of this book. Not the entire book. One ayah of this book is enough. One verse. لو أنزلنا هذا القرآن على جبل لرأيته خاشعا متصدعا من خشية الله. We can do that. It's not difficult for us. But the Prophet Muhammad came to speak to your mind, to your reason, to your intellect, to your soul, not to your eyes, not to your eyes. He's addressing our soul. This book is addressing our soul. It has a greater impact. It touches your heart. So even if you don't see the Prophet himself, but you see his work, you see what he brought from God, touches your heart. But unfortunately, we don't appreciate this book. A Hindu leader in India was given the Quran by a Muslim leader in India. He gave him a copy of the Quran. So this Hindu leader, he read the Quran, the entire Quran. Then after a few months, he met the Muslim scholar. He said to him, I want you to give me your real book. You didn't give me your real book. The book you gave me is excellent. It's excellent. The book you gave me is powerful, excellent. But I need you to give me your real book. He said, we don't have real or not real. We only have one book. He said, no. Because your acts, your behavior, you the Muslims, do not resemble, does not match the book that you have given me. The book that you have given me is so powerful. Book of manners. Powerful book. Book of humanity. You can say that this book is not written by a human being, is not made by a human being. So maybe the Muslims have a different book. They are following a different book. Because if they follow this book, they would become angels walking on earth. This is the reality. We the Muslims, we don't respect the Quran. How many of us, we really read the book, we love the book, and we follow the book? How many? What is the percentage? Quran is being put in museums. The most abandoned book in our homes, the most abandoned book is the Holy Quran. Go check it out tonight. Go to your Quran and see how much dust has gathered on your book. In your own room, in your own house, the book has been abandoned. They don't appreciate it. God says this is a powerful book. وَلَوْ أَنَّ قُرْآنًا سُيِّرَتْ بِهِ الْجِبَالِ. We can move the mountains with this book. أَوْ قُطِّعَتْ بِهِ الْأَرْضِ أَوْ كُلِّمَ بِهِ الْمَوْتَى. So, God is saying to them, Ya Rasulullah, if they want to believe, they can believe. One verse is enough. One verse of this book is enough for them to believe in God and to know that you are the messenger of God. But those people are not looking for the truth. They are mu'anid. Mu'anid, they are defying you. They are stubborn. They are challenging you with their questions, with their requests. They are not being realistic. They are not being realistic. They try to defy you. وَلَوْ أَنَّ قُرْآنًا سُيِّرَتْ بِهِ الْجِبَالُ أَوْ قُطِّعَتْ بِهِ الْأَرْضِ أَوْ كُلِّمَ بِهِ الْمَوْتَى بَلْ لِلَّهِ الْأَمْرُ جَمِيعًا. All the affairs belongs to God. God says it's easy for me to create a miracle for people. Every day God can make a miracle. But what's the point? What's the point? God says, I'm not going to coerce people through miracles. I'm not going to perform, because God says, I'm not a magician. A magician wants to draw your money, empty your pocket. So he does magic or sorcery, sihr, right before your eyes. God says, I'm not going to use this method, because I'm speaking to your mind. If you accept me, ahlan wa sahlan, welcome. If you don't accept me, I'm not going to waste my time. So don't ask the Prophet to perform the role of a sorcerer or a magician. He's not a magician. He's not sahir. He came to speak to your mind. If it makes sense to you, you accept it, you are welcome. If you don't accept it, you're going to lose. قُلْ بَلْ لِلَّهِ الْأَمْرُ جَمِيعًا أَفَلَمْ يَيْأَسِ الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا أَلَّوْ يَشَاءُ اللَّهِ لَهَدَى النَّاسَ جَمِيعًا وَلَا يَزَالُ الَّذِينَ كَفَرُوا تُصِيبُهُمْ بِمَا صَنَعُوا قَارِعًا. Many of the Muslims ask, this is the meaning of this verse, that why God does not force people to accept Him? Good question. Can He do this or He cannot? Practically, can He force people to believe in Him or not? Of course He can. Of course. God can have a system where He can force people through coercion to believe in Him. They have no other choice. But God says, this is against my policy. Why? Because God says the faith, iman, that is based on force and coercion has no value and has no benefit. It would not benefit you. Because the main reason for iman is to allow us to reach perfection, human perfection, to be real human being, real believers in God, knowing our responsibilities, knowing why we are here. So if God wants to impose religion on us, then this means, what is the difference between us and animals? No difference. We have no choice. And therefore the prayers which is being coerced upon you, pushed down your throat, has no value. Ask your children. You have children at home. Those who pray out of fear because their father yell at them, scream at them, as they used to do with us when we were kids. Kids would pray at that time, but they don't enjoy the prayers. Not only they don't enjoy the prayers, they make jokes, they jump up and down. When the jama'ah, they do sujood, they run away outside, you know. It's a playing field. They make a mockery of the prayers. Why? Because they don't like it. Because the father, the mother are forcing them, threatening them, intimidating them. So the prayers has no value here, has no benefit. It's waste of time. God says, I want you to understand the prayers and love the prayers. I don't want you to do the prayers out of fear. The other day, a friend asked me that I do my 5 daily prayers, but I don't enjoy them. I said, you are right. You are not the only one. Listen to me on this. She said, I do my 5 daily prayers, but I don't enjoy them. I don't take them to heart. I said, you are right. You know why? Because these five daily prayers, you look at them as something being imposed on you, so you just want to do them to get them off your chest. Like a chore, Ahsant. Responsibility. I just want to do the morning prayers, so I've done it. Therefore, you don't enjoy it. It's like when you force a child to eat the food. You know some children who are skinny, and their mothers, their fathers, they force them to eat the food. Ask the children, are you enjoying the food? They don't enjoy, they cry. They are eating, and they are crying. You see the tears. Because they are being tortured. They don't like the food. Same thing with the prayers when you don't like it. When you don't like it, you don't believe in it, you don't enjoy it. You don't enjoy it. It becomes mechanical. It becomes boring. You start liking the prayers when nobody is forcing you. You have the need inside to speak to your Lord. Not because your father is telling you so. Yes, our parents have the responsibility of encouraging us, making the prayers easy for us, reminding us to pray, but not forcing us. Not forcing us. Are you with me on this or not? Are we on the same page, inshallah? Sallu ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. Besides, let me tell you this story of the prayers. The prayers which is only mechanical, and the prayers that you draw spiritual nourishment, you really enjoy it. I had a teacher. She used to teach us English about 30 years ago. Yes, 30 years ago, exactly, 1989. This teacher was in the college, and let's say we're supposed to finish the class by 6 p.m. But she goes on and on and on, sometimes until 7 p.m. And some of the students, they get tired after 2 hours. So they look at their watches, she doesn't care. Until someone comes from the college and knock at the door and says, listen, the class is over, we are about to shut the college. So you have to leave. So one day I asked my teacher, she was a female English teacher, British English, in London. I said to her, you are supposed to teach up to 6. Why do you teach overtime up to 6:30? Do you get money? She said, no. No. She said something important. She said, I love my job. I don't work for money here. I work because I love this job. So when she loves the job, she goes overtime. And she doesn't pay attention that it is overtime because she loves her job. Whereas if you work for money, you look at your, you know, today I went to the pharmacy, I almost missed my medicine because they shut 6:15. That's it. If you go 6:15 and 1 second, shut. Same thing with banks, same thing with all ins. They work for money here. They are not ready to stay 1 minute longer. But when you love your job, you stay overtime, extra hours, because you love this job. Our problem, the Muslims, we don't love the prayers. We are forced to pray. Even the adult, let alone the children. People like me, I am forced to pray. Why? Because I know if I don't wake up for the Fajr, there is punishment. So I jump off my bed for the fear of punishment. I love what Imam Ali said. He said, "Inna qawman abadu Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala khawfan min narih. Fatilka ibadatul abid." There are some people who worship God out of fear, the fear of his punishment. That is the type of slavery worship, slaves. Because the slaves, they fear the punishment, so they have to do their job. Wa inna qawman عبد الله تعالى طمعا في جنته فتلك عبادة التجار. Other people, they worship God for his paradise, because they know he will take them to paradise. When they do this and this and that, God is going to be happy with them, take them to paradise. This type is the worshipping of the businessmen, the merchants. The merchants, they don't give anything in return for nothing. وَإِنَّ قَوْمًا. But there are people like Ali ibn Abi Talib himself and Ahlul Bayt, his family, his wife, his children. عَبَدُ اللَّهَ لَا خَوْفًا مِنْ نَارِهِ وَلَا طَمَعًا فِي جَنَّتِهِ. Neither of fear or of hope or greed, but وَلَكِنَّهُ وَجَدُوهُ أَحْلًا لِلْعِبَادَةِ فَعَبَدُوهُ. They saw him, they found God to be worthy of this friendship, worthy of this service. He's worth it. He's worth it. To take time and stand five times, and sometimes more than five times, to do extra prayers, nawafil, salatul layl, because it's worth it to spend time with him. This is the type of the worshipping that Ahlul Bayt teaches. But we don't pay attention to that. We don't pay attention. Let me conclude. God says, وَلَا يَزَالُ الَّذِينَ كَفَرُوا تُصِيبُهُمْ بِمَا صَنَعُوا قَارِعَةٌ. Those who reject God, they will see the result of their rejection and disbelief in this life, before the hereafter. They will receive calamities in their life. Calamities either in their homes, in their neighborhoods, or next door. As a reminder, the calamity falls next door sometimes, reminding them of their violations. أو تحل قريبا من دارهم حتى يأتي وعد الله إن الله لا يخلف الميعاد. And then God consoles the prophet. He says to him, Ya Rasulullah, don't worry. This is not something in you. When they are making a mockery of you, mocking you, this is not something in you. Why? وَلَقَدْ اسْتُهْزِئَ بِرُسُلٍ مِّن قَبْلِكَ. Many prophets before you, they were mocked by their followers. They were disrespected and rejected. فَأَمْلَيْتُ لِلَّذِينَ كَفَرُوا. I gave them respite for the disbelievers, because God's policy is not to punish immediately. This is his policy, remember. Some people say, I did a violation today, but nothing happened. Life is okay. I'm going about my life, my business, enjoying my health, my family, my food. God says, I don't send the punishment immediately. You know, when you do a violation, traffic violation in Europe, in Italy, in Spain, you know, after 6 months, you receive in the mail the ticket, the citation, after 6 months. So sometimes you speed up there, and you think that after 1 week, nothing happened. Where are the cameras then? No, don't worry. Don't worry. You will receive it in the mail, inshallah. You will see. So God says, I'll give them some respite. Why? I don't punish immediately because they might come back to me. They might remember. They might feel sorry. They might feel the regret and the remorse. I give them a chance. فَأَمْلَيْتُ لِلَّذِينَ كَفَرُوا ثُمَّ أَخَذْتُهُمْ فَكَيْفَ كَانَ عِقَابٌ. But if they don't believe, I will seize them. Then, how then was the retribution? Tonight, my friends, on the 7th of Dhul Hijjah is the martyrdom of our fifth Imam, Al-Imam Abu Ja'far Muhammadin al-Baqir alayhi salatu wassalam. The first Imam who started the University of Ahlul Bayt in the city of Medina. Muslim Ummah. An Ummah, a community who murdered the son of their prophet, Imam Hussein, out of ignorance, out of enchantment with the dunya, out of ghafla, forgetfulness. The Ummah, which was in the state of coma, the Ummah, Islamic Ummah at that time, was in a state of coma. Otherwise, No ummah, no community would murder the grandson of their own prophet, the prophet who brought them to Islam, who introduced them to God. They murder his son. So Imam al-Baqir decided to start a campaign of education, ta'lim and tarbiyah, which we all need, even today. Today what Muslims need more than anything else, more than a strong economy, more than this, more than that, we really need a campaign of learning, to learn. Ta'lim, awakening. And this campaign was started by the fifth Imam, Al-Imam Muhammad al-Baqir alayhi salatu wasalam. And he struggled a lot because he lived during the time of Bani Umayyah. And Bani Umayyah were the fierce enemies of the family of the Prophet. And he gave his life as a price. But the Imam, through his knowledge, Baqirul Ilm, the one who cuts the knowledge asunder. He penetrates through knowledge. This is the meaning of Baqirul Ilm, the most knowledgeable. And then he bequeathed his knowledge to his son, Al-Imam Abu Abdullah Ja'far ibn Muhammad al-Sadiq alayhi salatu wassalam. Both those two Imams, Imam al-Baqir, Imam al-Sadiq, they started their university. They educated the masses, including many religious leaders. Many scholars were their students. Not all only ilm, but with ilm we need something else. What is it? Akhlaq. With ilm we need akhlaq. Ilm by itself, knowledge by itself, ma'rifah by itself cannot function. Sometimes you find someone is knowledgeable, but he doesn't have good behavior, good akhlaq. Those imams were the example of knowledge and good behavior. A person comes to him and he swears at him in the middle of the street. Imam turns away from him. He comes again. He stands right before the imam. He says, "Anta a'nika ant. I mean you. When I swear at you." Imam says, "Wa ana a'fu ank, and I forgive you." This takes what, my friends? It's not easy. It's not easy when someone disrespects you in public. He swears at you, he calls you names, but you are willing to forgive that person. Those are our models, our leaders in this life and in the Akhirah. And I am very proud that we are the followers of Ahlul Bayt. We took them as our true leaders. We did not shift to others. We stayed with them, loyal to them. And this is exactly what God tells us. Ya ayyuhalladhina amanu. Ya ayyuhalladhina amanu. Taqullah, fear God. Wa kunu ma'as sadiqeen. Stay with those true leaders. Don't go to others. Don't waste your life. Don't waste your time. Stick to this tradition, the tradition of honesty, truth, and piety and righteousness. اللهم اغفر للمؤمنين والمؤمنات والمسلمين والمسلمات الأحياء منهم والأموات تابع لهم بيننا وبينهم بالخيرات. حاج مجتبى would recite out of respect for Imam al-Baqir, just 5 minutes lamentation by our مجتبى. And as our dearest حاج سمير mentioned, inshallah Saturday, tomorrow Salatul Jumu'ah at 1. And Saturday, the doors are going to open at 5:30, and we begin Dua Arafah at 6 sharp, inshallah, because it takes 1 hour, from 6 to 7, and then I will read the Dua at 7, inshallah. Haj Mujtaba would read the Ziyarah of Imam Hussein, and there is a couple of prayers, A'mal, Du'as, and the day of Arafah is a holy day, my friends, very holy day, so don't miss on this opportunity. It's weekend, so try to make it with your family members. And Salatul Eid, as Haj Samir mentioned, Sunday, inshallah, takbirat 9:15 and Salat 9:30 sharp, inshallah. Sallu ala Muhammadin wa Ali Muhammad.